is kind of a more of a minor board meeting, I'd say. We're going to do the kind of in-person big review of everything, hopefully in June or July, and that's going to include a compensation review and also all the, you know, all the stuff that we posted about our progress in 2013 generally. There's basically two goals of this call. One is just to formally review and approve a budget, since we haven't done that in a little while. But the budget is still sort of rough because we're going to have to incorporate, you know, the path of compensation. That's going to have to involve a compensation review. So we're going to do another budget when we do the bigger meeting. And then the other point is just that we haven't had a meeting in a while, so we want people to have a chance to weigh in, ask questions, see what's going on. We did publish our entire annual review to our blog, so, you know, anyone who wants to talk about that, we're happy to discuss it. But this isn't, like, the formal review that we anticipate, you know, will be in person. So if that makes sense to everyone, and we're recording and everything, right? We're all set on that? Okay, cool. So let's start with the budget. Ellie sent out a spreadsheet that kind of lays out the big picture. Our expenses are growing a lot. Our revenues are growing a lot. We've been fundraising basically by talking to big donors, just kind of going through them, doing phone calls. I think it's gone pretty well. And so we've provided a fundraising update in the PDF that was sent out. And, you know, we've hired a bunch of people. So I'm happy to answer any questions about, you know, why all that's happening or what we're doing. I think, you know, to some degree we've addressed that in our annual review, but I'm happy to go through it for people. But I want to take questions about the budget and, you know, see what people are thinking and hopefully get it just formally approved for now. Thoughts? Here comes something.
The large bump in payroll that occurs in July is mainly because of the significant number of hires that are coming on board in the next 3 months.
The biggest thing in July is that's when we do our annual compensation review, and so everyone's comp can change then. There are also a lot more people coming on, and in the summer there's also going to be a bunch of interns, so that all contributes to the summer months being a bit higher.
Which is what? So the interns are if I'm reading the budget sheet you sent out correctly, October to December. This is Rob, by the way. October to December is $20,000 less payroll than in the summer. But the summer payroll is, you know, $150K bigger than January to March. So it's $130K in new people plus $20,000 in interns. That's the picture.
No, it's some in new people, some bump to current people, and then interns.
Got it. I see. July is when the new salary increase the salary take place on the basis of compensation increases.
Right.
That's what you said before. Got it.
Yeah.
And our next board meeting will deal with that question.
Yeah. Though I don't think most of that is an increase in comp. Isn't a fair amount of this like new full-timers too? Don't we have new full-timers?
Yeah, I do not off the top of my head know how to break down, can't easily break down those numbers.
It looks like there's 11 as of the first of this year, there's 11 people full-time on staff, and there's 10 more hires. Also, you're shooting for 21 by a year or so from now, so almost doubling the staff size. Although some of those will be junior people at lower salaries, I assume.
Yeah, so that's what's going into, but the hires are like, I mean, these are just projected, right? Like, we're trying to do our best guess about the number of people we might want to hire, and they're spread out starting from June through, you know, taking that all the way out for, like, a year, the additional 12 months that's in the budget. So there's basically, there's, like, three things, right? There's new people coming on starting in June, and those are new people are evenly spread out starting in like June of 2014 through June of 2015. So that's like a constant increase. And then there's a small bump in the summer for people who will only be here over the summer. And then there's a bump on July 1st for additional compensation. And I could pull up the number that is the portion of that that is from a bump in compensation, if you want. But we'll have a board meeting to review that before that actually goes through.
Give us a little bit of a breakdown as far as the allocation of people or time or whatever between GiveWell Main, GiveWell Labs, if you have any separate breakdowns for administration, you know, any kind of, you know, basically, one thing I'm interested in is where is all the growth in manpower? What is the focus of that? Is it the same as what GiveWell has been, or is it going to enable things to be new areas, or, you know, what have you?
So just so everyone knows, Sean just came back in. Just wanted everyone to be aware of that. So to answer the question, you know, I would say that in the short term, I would say more of that capacity is going to, you know, the top charity stuff than to GiveWell Labs. And that's because of just, like, what we know how to do and what we know how to manage people to do. I think long run, we're trying to build general capacity and gear up to be able to do more of both. So, you know, some of the work that people do, and Ellie can fill in some of this too, but it's, you know, there's a lot of general purpose work, actually, that's split between the two. So there's, you know, there's conversation notes, which is when we do a conversation with someone, we want to type up the notes from it. Then there's GiveWell Top Charities. You know, I think we're going to be putting in a lot more work into that than we ever have before, and that's something that, as we see more interest in our research and there's more contenders and we know more about how to identify contenders, you know, the more charities you're seriously considering for a recommendation, each charity is an enormous amount of work. So that creates a lot of work. And what we're trying to do is we're trying eventually to get to a place where, you know, people can pretty much run nearly all of that work without me and Ellie needing to be, like, highly involved, although we're not, like, in a rush to get there. So right now we're both pretty involved, and especially Ellie. It does mean reviewing more charities. I mean, this year we kind of have a goal of doing deep dives on 5 charities. I mean, last year I did a deep dive on 1 charity, and that was a struggle. In addition to doing the deep dives, we have to do the updates on all the charities, and as the number grows, that'll get bigger. And then we have to keep everything up to date and keep vetting everything. So that's a lot of the growth in work. And then GiveWell Labs is, you know, where that is right now is it's basically a couple of our more senior employees are really focused on GiveWell Labs. That includes me. I spend nearly all my time on it. Alexander spends nearly all his time on it. And we have a couple other people who spend significant time on it. And so obviously, like, part of this capacity is kind of making that up. But when you look at how the hours are allocated, it's more than half to GiveWell Top Charities. It's a significant amount of both, and it's increasing the amount we can do on both. That sounds about right, Ellie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So other questions on the budget, and do people feel okay with provisionally approving it?
So let me just quickly answer the question Rob had. Like, it's going to be a little hard to translate the numbers into this budget that you're looking at, but, like, these include a projection of, like, an additional $107,000 of compensation for all staff who's currently on board. And so the rest of the budget increase comes from additional hires rather than existing people.
Okay. That's great. I don't know, this is my second board meeting, what the past practice has been in terms of providing budget materials. As I look over this document, I notice a small expense coming up for an audit. And I'm guessing that the kinds of materials given to us here you need to provide for whomever your auditors are going to look much different. Speaking of myself, I don't need whatever the detailed arrangements are that you need to provide, I believe, to an auditor. But something that included a bit more information about revenues, which is a blank line throughout the projections, you've got reserves in there. This gives a good sense of projected expenditures, but no sense about projected revenues, how the reserves go up and down. So I could use more detail than this, less detail than what an auditor wants.
So we have revenue information in the other document, in the PDF, and that's what we agreed to at a previous board meeting, that you know, that was the appropriate level of detail for the revenue. The stuff that's in that document, it's done differently because it's just, like, a different kind of information. Like, it's not, you know, the expenses are broken out by category. The revenue is broken out by donor type. I think that makes sense. So it might be a little clumsy, but they're done in different documents. They're done in different formats, but I think each one is appropriate, and we're happy to, you know, revisit the format of the revenue if you want more info than that. But you should probably pull up the PDF and see that revenue breakdown.
No, yep.
Yeah.
Got it. So I have a question that's related to the intersection of those two and some confusion about the other document in relation to the budget.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point you say that fundraising is a priority, and then later you say that outreach is not a priority,
mm-hmm.
but fundraising activities seem to be under outreach.
Mm-hmm. No, those are different.
And then the revenue projection, it has a big slug of revenue coming in at the end of the year, and it boosts reserves back up above $2 million, but still leaves at about a $300,000 gap a quarter. So what is presumably a $1.2 million gap over the course of 2015.
So first off, fundraising is a reasonably high priority. Outreach is, I mean, they're different things. So outreach is getting people to use our research, and it tends to be, I mean, when we think about outreach, we think about ways to really reach, like, very large amounts of people and get them to use our research, or it could mean different things, but, you know, the baseline is higher with outreach. It's trying to get that money move number, which is in the 8 figures, to go up. Fundraising means, like, reaching out to people who are usually already fans, and getting them to give, and the amounts involved tend to be smaller, the time commitments tend to be smaller. So, you know, I think it's fair to say that fundraising is a reasonably high priority, although not a huge part of our time budget, and that is different from outreach.
Okay, so the donors portion of outreach is what confused me. So those conversations with one-on-one calls are all about research. It's not about talking to donors. But the donors who have given at least $10,000 are also sort of in your list of fundraising folks, are they not?
Yeah, I mean, I think the approach we've taken is when we've never talked to someone before and they just gave $10,000, the first thing we'll do is, or I'll do, is talk to them to, like, form a basic relationship before trying to hit them up for additional money. And so that is more of a, I mean, it could be categorized differently. It's more of, the mindset I've had is it's more of an outreach activity where it's not directly fundraising, and the people who have given in the past and know GiveWell a little bit better are the first people we'd call for unrestricted or operating support.
One question about the revenue sources, I think that's related. When you say, like, 100K donor, does that mean 100K to GiveWell operating support donor, or 100K to all GiveWell, including top charities donor?
So these are, the numbers in the PDF are just dollars to GiveWell operating support.
Got it.
Tim, you had another question, I think, about the budget that I didn't quite follow.
Budget. Yeah, so if I'm looking at back at the budget spreadsheet, by end of September, our reserves are at $1.6 million. There's an anticipated inflow of about $1 million of operating support at the final quarter. But at that point, without new giving, we seem to be operating at about $300,000 in the red per quarter. Right, so reserves fall by $600,000 over the next 2 quarters.
You mean from, well, yeah, from, you mean in the first 2 quarters of 2015?
Correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's, it kind of makes sense that reserves will fall in after giving season because so much of our money comes in December. So I'm not, I don't know, I don't think I'm addressing your question, but the fact that our reserves fall, like, that's what I'd expect to see on an annual basis, that our reserves would be highest on December 31st and, like, probably lowest on November 30th.
Yeah, so granted, just the track of reserve depletion
is dramatically faster after January 2015 than it was prior to. Is that just because we're spending more on personnel, or is that, you know, how much of that gap are you looking to close? Or what is the optimal rate of reserve depletion?
So I think it is just because of additional personnel. We have a larger budget in March of 2015 than we do previously, and so we're going to draw down our reserves more quickly. The way that we are thinking about this is our sort of goal to fundraise to is projecting holding a year's worth of reserves at each point in the next 12 months. And so, you know, right now, we project holding less than 1 year of reserves as of July 2014. So we're going to keep fundraising from donors, telling them that our funding gap is not closed, and we would like to have more funding. I also think that so we could debate whether we're putting sufficient time into fundraising given that picture. I think it seems appropriate to me, but I'm not sure.
Yes. That being said, though, the total in column. Okay, I see. That gap is just $30,000, though, at July 2014.
It's
right. So I mean, we are just barely dipping below 1 year of reserves.
Yeah, as of September 30th, on June 1st, on June 30th, we have more reserves than expenses projected. And then on September, at the end of the third quarter, September 30th, we have we're $110,000 below. 1.64 million in reserves versus 1.75 million in expenses.
I think it seems reasonable to me. I mean, I think about a year of reserves, you know, it's a little unfortunate that your revenue is so lumpy, coming into December. So there's always a possibility you'll make a big mistake one way or another and over or underestimate revenue, but I think that's inherent in the process. But
yeah.
You know, I don't think you'd want to shoot for a whole lot more. It'd be nice to have more than a year of reserves, but you know, I don't know that donors would feel all that compelled if you had vast reserves. And conversely, you know, there'd be real operating risks if they got less. So it strikes me as reasonable enough, both as a target and as far as these projections show, which, assuming you meet the projections, you stay fairly close to that one year target throughout.
Yeah, I mean, the question is less about what's the total sum of the reserve, and how much fundraising has to be done. Ellie, I don't see where that $1.7 million is coming from. According to the spreadsheet, it's $1.67 million for the time period.
I'd like to hear more about how that fundraising is going, and you know, both for the sake of prudent budgeting, and also just how are you guys finding your traction with major donors, and you know, are you learning anything about who is willing to be a major donor?
Sure. Tim, to answer your question, I'm not sure why the 12-month forward expenses. I think I understand the spreadsheet. So what is your question, Tim?
Well, I mean, you mentioned $1.75 million as the expenses for July 2014 to June 2015, but the spreadsheet says it's 1.6.
Yeah. So I just misread the spreadsheet because there's like a column J all the way in the end, which is the July to June.
Right.
And then column E, the bottom, is I think September 30th and the 12-month forward expenses from that date. So they're higher starting.
Oh, I see.
Sorry about that.
Okay. And so you are making the calculation of when you're dipping below based on the difference between row 15 and row 16?
Yeah, I mean, we're actually basic. We have a, like, the sheet we're looking at is a monthly one, and we shared a quarterly one with the board to, because right. it has fewer columns. So it's in July that we actually dip below.
Okay, so now I'm seeing where that number comes from. And so, tying this into the question that Tom was asking, are we essentially talking about one additional renewing $100,000 a year donor? You know, what is the amount of fundraising that's needed? How are you feeling about the existing donors and their continuation at these levels? You know, what portion of that revenue are we trying to replace or increase?
Yeah, so the numbers in this sheet where we're talking about projected revenues are based on, you know, primarily one-on-one conversations with donors to understand what their expectations are for what they'll do in the future. Many of these people are those who have given repeatedly over the years. So I think that it's, a reasonable projection. It's not just like basing it on past growth, and it probably leans conservative because, you know, we've had the experience of finding new large donors, you know, every year. And so we're, you know, we haven't baked that into our fundraising estimates thus far.
We do have one that puts in some kind of rough estimate of that. I don't think it's the one we normally use, but it might be worth just confirming if that's the case.
I don't have
you
anyone
don't
like that.
Okay,
so.
All right.
And then, you know, the question of like how much we're trying to raise, I don't have a good answer to that question. I would like to get to the point where we are, you know, closer to, you know, where our reserves are not dipping. We're not projecting that our reserves dip below 1 year of expenses. In July, it's like later, or I mean, I think the ideal would be that we receive sufficient unrestricted funding that we just grant money out to top charities, because I think most donors are choosing between giving to top charities and giving to us. But I also think that, like, I don't know. I look at these figures and the experience we've had thus far with our donor base, which has been like a pretty positive reaction to funding us. And I, you know, generally feel optimistic about our funding scenario. So I recognize that I'm not giving the type of answer you're probably looking for to that question. So it's something that, you know, we could provide more detail on if it would be helpful.
The question of approving the budget and understanding where you guys are going to allocate time is intimately tied into this. How much more money needs to be raised, and how much time will that take?
Yeah, I'm not sure that it's like such an easy question, though, because we anticipate our budget like probably continuing to grow substantially over the next few years. And so a lot of the goal now with our fundraising is beginning to build the base of donors, the capacity internally at GiveWell to raise money from donors, and you know, not take the approach that we often did in our first few years when our budget was so small that it was very easily covered by a very small number of donors close to the project. And so the mindset now is, you know, we have not asked our donor base, you know, actively for funds in the past, and this is something we need to do. So we're putting in a small amount of time, you know, roughly 2 to 3 hours a week of my time into fundraising, and, you know, track how things are going and see if it seems like we need to increase that effort or maintain the status quo. And I don't know, it seems to me, based on how we've done so far, that there's no reason to significantly increase the effort. I also don't. So that's kind of where how I see the situation.
So what are the bright points that you're thinking about that say tell me about the decision-making process of, oh, our assumptions are wrong, we need to spend more time on this.
Yeah, I mean, if we saw the, the reserves falling below our projected expenses even sooner, that would obviously be something that's concerning. If we were, struggling to, I mean, certainly if we saw 12-month forward expenses exceed 12-month forward revenues, now they're, not far apart. If our reserves were lower, I mean, I think that would certainly, at the closer we got to being in a situation where currently our reserves were below 12-month forward expenses, or we were projecting a funding gap over the next 12 months, we would start to increase the priority. But the picture of, pretty good success raising funds from donors, projecting revenues significantly above expenses right now for the next 12 months, and reserves, surpassing expenses by, by a significant amount, doesn't seem like, anyhow, that's...
I mean, Elliot, I don't know, do people think it'd be helpful, and Elliot, is it possible to give a little bit of a just rundown of, like, since we started the slightly intensified fundraising, how many conversations you've had, what the results have been, and how much more there is where that came from? Because that to me is, that's what I keep hearing in people's questions, is just, like, how is fundraising going? Like, what would it, what would it look like to raise more? Are we raising enough? Like, how's that going,
basically? So I think the best information for that is our metrics post, where we showed the difference in funding, through the end of 2013 versus the previous year, 2013 being the year where we put more effort into fundraising. I'm just pulling up the numbers. So basically, like in 2012, we raised $580,000 unrestricted. In 2013, we raised $1.4 million unrestricted. And, based on the conversations that we've had, we now project raising $1.95 million over the next 12 months. I don't know. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, and then like how much time have you spent on that, and that there are more people we could call if we need to do more of that?
We've definitely like called the biggest people, and I spend like a couple hours a week.
Yeah.
And is there more when they came, where they came from, and who are they? I guess just some sense about sort of how much you can. How scalable the fundraising is would be somewhat helpful.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like the classic the story you've heard for a long time. I mean, I think most of the money has come from new major donors who came to us and instead of giving to top charities, gave to us unrestricted because we were out there saying that would be helpful to us. That accounts for like a large proportion of that. I think that that is even more likely to be the majority of future funds that we raise, because we've gone to most of the larger donors and talked to them about fundraising. The other thing that we're planning to do is offer donors to our top charities, people who give to our top charities via our website, the option to give some portion of that or some additional amount to GiveWell unrestricted to support us directly, which will probably yield like some non-negligible.
What Ellie's talking about is like a checkbox on the website. So that's something we haven't done yet, and that's something we're going to do, is like put a checkbox on the website that's like, would you like to give to GiveWell? So obviously people always have the option to give to us, but putting it in that context is definitely a nudge that is common. among groups like Kiva, Donors Choose. We've never done it before because we thought, you know, well, let's not ask for money if there's no real benefit to it. And we didn't see much benefit to it because we didn't have a lot of small donors. And so we would kind of just go to big donors and ask them for money, and that was good enough. And now we're like, okay, there's a lot of small donors. They give a lot. If we could, you know, if we could capture 5% of that, meaning half of them choose to give 10%, that would be a significant amount of revenue, so it's probably time to go ahead and do that. It's not a pressing need. It's not something we're going to be in trouble if we don't do, but I don't see why not, and I think it'll have benefits. So that is a change we're going to make. We're working on that.
This is Bridget. On the bottom of one of your pages, it said you've had 3 meetings this year with potentially major donors. That strikes me as low, but I don't know if I just don't have the right context for understanding how many potential new donors you want to get, you know, how many meetings you may be having a week or a month.
Yeah, so this is the...
Do you have any sort of annual goals that way?
Yeah. So this is in the... Sorry that this doesn't have more context in the written document. I mean, this is part... This would be part of the idea of networking in Silicon Valley to try and, you know, attract more large donors here to give to our top charities. And this is something we haven't prioritized, though we've done when we've had an easy opportunity to do so. It's possible we'll do some more of this, you know, in the future, but it's not something we're putting, like, we're not making this a significant priority for GiveWell right now.
Yeah, I would say, so first off, just keep in mind, this is, like, meetings with people who could be, like, really major donors. This isn't, you know, this is meetings with people who could really give quite a substantial amount. And I would just say, like, at this time, it's not a strategic priority. It's not something that we want to have metrics and deliverables on. It's not something that we want, like, in the budget, really. And I think that will change, but this is, you know, I think the lessons that we've got from our past... it's much easier to pitch someone when you have something concrete you're pitching them on. And so at this time, you know, GiveWell Labs is still kind of this abstract idea, like GiveWell Top Charities was a long time ago. I think that is changing. But, you know, if you want to know where the effort is going this year, it's the effort is going into turning GiveWell Labs into something more concrete, and it's going into turning GiveWell Top Charities into something that can operate at more scale and with less reliance on me and Ellie. I mean, those are... And then there's, you know, fundraising's happening, but it's not a huge use of our time. Those are the really big things that are going on. And I think those are the big things that should be going on, and those are the things that we want. You know, those are how we're going to measure our progress. And then, you know, I do think GiveWell Labs is going to become a very concrete thing, and at the point where it does, it's going to be a bigger priority to go ahead and, you know, network and pull people in. We may change that call. I think we've been talking a little bit about trying to pull more people in on the ground floor of GiveWell Labs. So it may change, but I think at this time we're kind of saying that's not the priority, that's not a strategic priority. And in terms of GiveWell Labs getting more concrete, that's something we're happy to be held to and think there's going to be, you know, a ton of progress on this year.
So I think it may just be helpful to draw the distinction again between outreach and fundraising.
Yeah.
So the 3 meetings that you're pointing to are 3 kind of outreach meetings, like getting to know you meetings with like potentially extremely large scale people in the Bay Area. And that, I think, is distinct from the 2 to 3 hours a week that Ellie is spending talking to, you know, existing GiveWell donors and fans about contributing to GiveWell.
Yeah. Yeah, Ellie's had way more than 3 discussions.
I think I was conflating the two.
Yeah, Ellie's had way more than 3 discussions.
Do you have a track of the number of meetings you've been having with donors for unrestricted purposes? Do you have that information as well?
Not really.
We have it somewhere, right?
No. You have, the amount of time you spend.
I have the amount of time. I mean, the way that it goes, the reason I don't have this, if it sounds weird that I don't, is I've probably done, 30 to 40 meetings or calls this year. Maybe that number is not perfectly right. But of that number, you know, 75 to 80% of people are, like, pretty amenable to giving to GiveWell. And so it's basically been, like, people are very happy to do it. You know, sometimes it's not even been a meeting, it's just been an email to, you know, check whether someone expects to maintain their level of giving in future years or whether this year was a one-off. And so the general vibe has been a very positive one on fundraising.
I mean, we have a list of who's doing what and who's done what in the past.
You so mean,
we
can what each donor has given,
yeah,
and what they're
what each donor has given and what they're planning to give, and we so anyone who wants a report that is drawn from that data of, like, you know, how many new donors we picked up in each category, that's something we could generate for the next meeting by drawing on that data. And what Ellie's saying, I guess, we don't have it breaking down meeting by meeting, like all the people that we asked and said no. I think that is, like, I agree, that's not a big deal. If our success rate's been pretty high, you know, I think most of the data exists in the form of, like, who is changing their behavior and how.
Getting that 30 to 40 number, it's the number that I'm looking at. So that was helpful for me to know, you know, 30 to 40 in this year, and if that's something that could be included in future reports, at least I would be interested to know it.
Okay.
And to jump in here then one step further, I'd like to hear you guys talk a little bit about fundraising for general operating expenses for GiveWell or GiveWell Labs. So if fundraising for the organization is a priority, can you say a bit more about the folks who give GiveWell money for either the maintenance of the recommendations or the labs? Are 100% of these people also donors to the top-rated charities? Are there people who don't give to the recommended charities but do give to GiveWell? What are they like? How do you find them? I'd like to hear a bit more, and in general, I guess, about the picture. And then the more interesting question to me is, if, as I'm assuming, the standard path into donating to GiveWell, not direct to the charities, is someone finds you, whatever the route, gives a bunch of money to recommended charities, they express interest, they're over a certain amount, you make contact with them, you ask them at some point, do they offer to give money to GiveWell? How do you guys think about asking, now that fundraising is a bigger need in the coming 12, 24 months, trade-offs between person X has a certain amount, a large amount to give overall to some allocation between GiveWell's recommended charities and GiveWell, the organization. How do you think about recommending an allocation?
Right. Yeah. Okay. So good questions. So first, I think it's worth distinguishing between individuals who support us and institutions. And so I'll just...
Yep.
The institutions that support us are Good Ventures. The Hewlett Foundation currently supports us, though they're winding down their program. That has supported us. We potentially will get more support from their future program. We don't know. And we have, like, a couple more years. The exit grant they gave us covers us for a couple more years. Then so those are the institutions. On the individual side, I don't think there's not a big distinction between the type of person who gives to GiveWell Unrestricted and the type of person who gives to our top charities. In both groups, people who strongly support our mission and really are major fans of what GiveWell does are, you know, the types of people who give significantly both to top charities and to us unrestricted. You know, in the past, they have often taken the path of first giving to top charities and then slowly coming over to give some to us. Sometimes, you know, we've asked them, sometimes we haven't, they've just done it. But it's basically the same group of people who make up our full audience base. And then you had one other question that I'm blanking on now.
The allocation.
Oh, right, the allocation. So what we have told people now is, you know, we think... the sort of optimal decision is for donors who really are committed to GiveWell to give 100% of their donation to our operating support. That's like the best thing that we think they can do, because we think the ideal situation would be for us to fully close our funding gap to the point where we're granting extra out to top charities. And like largely what that does is saves our fundraising time and allows additional funds, other donors' funds, to just go to top charities. You know, we also tell them that if they give to top charities, that's great as well. I mean, often these are people who, you know, they're coming. We're not making very hard pitches in fundraising to people. They're generally coming to us asking for advice about what we think is the optimal thing to do. And so, you know, we try to give them a, you know, a kind of a complete picture of their different options and what we would do in their shoes. The reason we've said to people that we think giving to us is the ideal way to allocate their funds is that, you know, I think that, you know, if we really needed to raise funds, like, one of the first things we would do is go to Good Ventures and request more money. And that would be a discussion with Carrie and Good Ventures board, depending on the size of the grant. But, you know, we're not doing that because we'd like to see our funding sources be more, not too heavily reliant on any one funder. And so, you know, we also tell this to donors that, you know, giving to our operations is a thing that they can do, that Good Venture, and allowing us to diversify our funding sources is something they can do that Good Ventures cannot do, because, you know, we already get funding, significant funding from Good Ventures, and that's, you know, that's part of the argument we give for why we think it's worthwhile to support us.
Yeah, good. That's really helpful to hear. And then in the spirit of what I was suggesting before, again, at least for me, if future budget documents could include some type of breakdown between institutional forms of support for GiveWell and individual support, and something like, I mean, it sounds like what you're saying, Ellie, is that all in all, you've had the happy circumstance of not really having had to work very hard at fundraising. People come in the door through the quality of the research. You encounter them in some various way. They offer to help, and then you tell them more or less what you just rehearsed. That's a far, far easier climb than I think most people have in fundraising. But if the needs for fundraising in the near-term, medium-term future are going to be significantly greater, it'd be nice to know how the division between institutional forms of support and individual support is projected, what it's been historically, and having some clarity about what you just described, which was new information, at least for me, namely that it's important to your sense of the organization that support for the operating expenses of GiveWell not come exclusively or overwhelmingly from one organization, namely Good Ventures.
Yep, that makes sense. And so the breakdown is one we have included in the past, and we could include. I mean, the institutional situation is the Hewlett Foundation is at $100,000. Good Ventures is our largest supporter at $240,000 plus. You know, an in-kind grant that's actually from the office space that's not included in any of these figures.
And the research grant.
Yeah, and there's a separate...
Got it.
That just, what Ellie said reminded me of something. Just good to... This is just a reminder to everyone. This budget is very different from what you would see on a tax return because there are items it does not include. So two items that are not in this budget. One is grants to charities. So the way those work is people will give to us, and they'll say, please re-grant this to a top charity. We do that. We don't take any fees. And it's just a matter of, like, you know, it's a convenience for our customers. And so it's just a matter of how many people give and ask us to re-grant it. And we re-grant all of it. So we don't budget for that. That's not something that we, like, seek board approval for in advance. We just total up the people who gave for re-granting, and then we decide the amount we give to the board. So that can be a large number. I mean, that number tends to be bigger than all of our operating expenses. So if you look on, like, you know, you look on an audit, you'll actually see that most of the money is just those grants. And then another thing that's not included in this budget is an item that's not huge, but it's getting bigger, which is the Good Ventures Research Grant. So that is, and the basic idea there, and this is definitely something we've discussed and something we've written up a policy on, had the policy approved by the board, but just as a reminder, there are cases where there's an expense that we're comfortable making, that we would be comfortable making, like, if we were Good Ventures, or we're comfortable making, like, as a Good Ventures expense, but we wouldn't be comfortable putting in our budget that's supported by, like, this diversified donor base. And the distinction there is that, you know, if we're thinking about having a diversified donor base, there's only so much money we can raise, and we can only raise it so fast, whereas Good Ventures is in a different situation, and they have, you know, they're more liquid at this time. And so there are times when we'll say there will be a consultant that we want to hire or something, where we'll say, okay, you know, this is going to be paid for by an earmarked grant from Good Ventures, And that is in recognition of the fact that if we were to stop working with Good Ventures, we would not have the funds to pay this particular expense anymore, and we're fine with that, and we're comfortable with that. So, you know, core employees are paid for out of the general operating fund, and because of that, we want that fund to be diversified. We want it to be robust to Good Ventures going the other way. But there are some contractors, consultants, specialized employees who are paid for out of Good Venture Research Grant, and those are not included in this board-approved budget, but they do appear in our audited books.
There?
Yep, we're here.
Yep, sorry. Good, that was helpful, Holden, thanks.
Yep.
So do we need to formally approve something?
Yeah, we should formally approve the budget unless there are more questions. And I'm happy to record this as like a provisional approval, just, you know, we approve the general size and scope of this budget while understanding that we're going to revisit it at our next meeting, especially in terms of compensation.
Mm-hmm. Does an oral vote okay, or do we need emails?
I think an oral vote is okay. It's only elections that have to be written, so I vote in favor.
Yeah, I vote in favor with Tom.
Same, voting in favor.
Phil votes in favor.
I vote in favor.
Ellie votes in favor.
Carrie votes in favor.
Is that everyone? Did you write this down?
Tim votes in favor.
Sean wrote it all down.
Tim always gives it an extra few seconds just to think it over.
Yeah.
Cool. So the only other, you know, the only other thing for this meeting is just the general. I mean, we've already gotten into a lot of general questions about where we're headed and what we're doing, but maybe it's helpful to just run really quickly through the document we sent as a quick outline. Actually, thought I had this open, and I'm not sure what happened. Oh, I see, it was open in my browser. And just make sure that everyone's getting a chance to ask the questions they want, and also just any questions about our progress in 2013 or fair game. Hopefully you've read the blog post by now, and if not, you know, fine, we'll send them out again before the next meeting. So we did a fundraising update, talked about, we have in the document, we talk about recruiting. We talked a little bit about that already. I'm happy to answer more questions about it. Hired a bunch of staff last year, went from 5 to 11 full-time members, looking to roughly double again in the next year. Outreach, we're not focused on outreach, but we're doing some. Metrics, we gave a little summary of those. And then, you know, I think another thing that I'll just throw in there, even though it's not in this document, is just that GiveWell Labs is, you know, definitely going to, and is definitely going to be putting out a lot of stuff in the next few weeks, and kind of getting more concrete. So specifically what's going on, and this is really a research thing, so, you know, you'll be able to see it on the blog, and I don't necessarily see it as a board thing, but we have expressed an intention to declare focus areas, or declare like causes that we're going to commit to by the end of this calendar year. Not a complete set of causes, but causes within two broad categories, U.S. policy and global catastrophic risks. And we're in the final stages of putting together our report on U.S. policy and what causes we think are best to focus in. So we basically went through, you know, we went through the landscape of U.S. policy causes that a philanthropist might get involved in, and we kind of looked for, primarily for three criteria being importance. Is this issue, is this policy important from a humanitarian perspective? Tractability, meaning, you know, are there any special windows of opportunity to have an influence? Is this a winnable fight, etc.? And then finally, room for more funding. Is this an area that's crowded? Are there a lot of philanthropists, or is there kind of, you know, is it underfunded relative to its importance and tractability? And we've looked at, you know, we've talked to a lot of people by now with an eye toward assessing those things. We've looked at some causes at a very low level of depth. We've looked at some at a much higher level of depth. And at this point, we have kind of our preliminary picture of what causes we think we would focus on if we had to choose today. So we have a series of blog posts coming out that's going to lay those out, lay out a reasoning, and then for the rest of the year, we're going to be able to focus on getting feedback, on rethinking these things, on doing the investigations we need to look into whatever questions come up, and then also thinking about, you know, once we have a pretty good idea what causes we're focused on, thinking about hiring and thinking about what kind of staff we're going to hire to focus on those causes. Because I think, you know, one of the things that we've kind of decided and learned, and one of the big challenges of larger scale philanthropy, is that it helps a lot to pick a cause, pick a problem, be really committed to it, probably for several years at least, in a formal way, and be able to hire staff who's really going to specialize in it, get to know everyone in the field, get to know all the issues, and spend their time looking for giving opportunities and assessing giving opportunities and keeping up with grants. So that is something I think in politics we're like very on track to do. We're basically putting the finishing touches on the report, and we're going to put it out. It's going to be a series of blog posts, and then we're going to be in the mode of getting feedback, revisiting our conclusions, and thinking about who we can hire. And then, you know, that's one category of cause that we said we want to narrow down this year. The other category is global catastrophic risks, and that one's, like, not quite as advanced, but I think also well on pace to have a similar outcome. And there's other categories, like foreign aid and scientific research, where we've just felt we needed a little more time to get our bearings, but we continue to work on those.
Okay, well, then I'll just say one last thing, and then I have to hop off the call or to go somewhere else. In anticipation of perhaps the next meeting, after some of this stuff will have been unveiled, at least in the blog, I'll be curious to hear what you guys are thinking internally about the benchmarks you want to hit over the course of the next, say, 12 to 24 months on the GiveWell Lab side.
Yeah.
And how along the way you are going to be evaluating success or failure, or what the metrics are of whether or not GiveWell Labs is getting the traction you want, the type of the outcomes you want.
Yeah, I mean, I can more or less answer that question now. I can definitely give an outline without promising or anything that this is final. This is definitely, you know, the way I picture things right now is that by the end of this calendar year, we want to have commitments to causes in the two categories I named. By the end of the next calendar year, we want to have commitments to causes in the other categories. And that means that we've got an initial set of causes that we've kind of declared priority causes. You know, shortly after declaring them, although hiring takes a long time, so shortly could mean 6 months, we want to have staff who are working on those causes. And that's the proximate goal for GiveWell Labs. Then once we're in that state, then I think we set goals cause by cause from a, like, accomplishments impact perspective. And from an outreach perspective, I think at the point where we've really not only picked the causes but done some work on finding giving opportunities, that's the point at which we're going to revisit the question of how hard should we be working to pull more funders into this and tracking the dollars that go into it. So, you know, it's kind of a several-year time frame, but it has... I think it tells you what's happening in what order and what we expect to happen in the near term, what we don't. Obviously, yep. Like any plan that long is going to change, but you know, I think we do have proximate goals. We do have goals for each calendar year.
Good. All right. Well, apologies then for hopping off the call a bit early. I'll look forward to the next meeting in the summer.
Cool.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Anything else? All right. Well,
all right. So, I think I'm all set. Yeah.
Great. Well, sounds like we should wrap up. Thanks, everyone. You know, feel free to send over any questions you have if there are things we didn't cover on the call or you think of something after. And thanks again.
Bye, everybody. Bye.
Thanks,
bye.
Everyone.
Thanks,
bye.
Thanks.
Good night.